Tomorrow we'll pull the bodies together. We want to keep them away from that water. Now, if we can dig a canal under the fence, we'll have plenty of fresh water.
And the soil is good. We could plant some seed, grow some tomatoes, cucumbers, soybeans.
I can provide shelter. I can provide security. If there's anybody out there, anybody, please, you are not alone.
Scenes from life after an apocalypse, and now a book you hopefully will never need, but you might want to hear about it anyway. Dr. Lewis Dartnell is author of The Knowledge, How to Rebuild Our World from Scratch. He explains what we would need to do after a real apocalypse, but more importantly, what we need to know. Dr. Dartnell is a UK Space Agency research fellow at the University of Leicester. Welcome to WNYC and hello from New York, Dr. Dartnell.
Hi, Brian. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. And more specifically, you're an astrobiologist. Does that mean that you specialize in looking for life in space, like aliens?
Yeah, I do. It's looking into the possibility of extraterrestrial life. And I focus on the possibility of bacteria, of microbial life in the surface of Mars, and what signs, what evidence of life you'd look for with our robotic probes. So it works closely with NASA and the Mars rovers that you guys are building as well.
So what's the best evidence that you have that there is life on Mars?
Well, we have no evidence for life yet, but from what we know about Mars and its environment, and importantly, its environment billions of years ago, there's very good reason to believe it had the right conditions for life to get started. And so that's what we're looking for now. We're looking for where those bacteria might have been, and comparing that to kind of the most extreme environments on Earth that we still find life teeming in, the kind of extremophile bacteria or organisms they're called.
Is your day job related to your book? Are there lessons from what you were just describing for rebooting civilization after an apocalypse?
Well, I mean, there are some overlaps. There's some incredible examples of mass extinctions in the history of our own planet, the history of the Earth, where like the whole of life has been pushed to the very brink of extinction. And in human history, of course, there's been examples of huge plagues like the bubonic plague or the Black Death that came close to collapsing civilization. And, you know, the kind of Mayans and the Aztecs and plenty of civilizations throughout history have collapsed. They've just disappeared and the kind of society has evaporated. So what I've tried to do for The Knowledge, how to rebuild a world from scratch, is just use that possibility as a starting point for a thought experiment and to get people thinking about what knowledge would you want to have handed to you and in a single book as a survivor in a post-apocalyptic world that tells you how to do all the things you need to do for yourself, to grow food, to make clothes for yourself, to get metals out of rock, to, you know, produce all of the substances and processes and principles that modern civilization just does for us. And no one alive today, I don't think, really has that kind of deep connection to the means of production anymore, like we did perhaps a few hundred years ago.
It's a pretty morbid topic for a book, what to do after a major catastrophe is killed off.
I'd like to think it's an optimistic book. It's more about how our world works, to be honest. The apocalypse is just, I say, just the premise, just the starting point. And it's not really mentioned again after the very first chapter, once we got over that. And it's just a way of holding up a mirror to our own civilization to see, like I say, that the very fundamentals of what a civilization needs to run and then how you can provide for that.
And how much has been lost?
Exactly. It's a kind of a, you know, kind of a memoir, I suppose, for what we stand to lose if we do mess up, if things go wrong for us and our civilization does collapse. All the kind of accumulated knowledge that we've built up over centuries, we stand to lose all of that if it's forgotten. You have to start from scratch.
So you do actually describe sort of best-case scenarios of apocalypse and worst-case apocalypse scenarios in your book. What would be a preferable apocalypse?
So if you had to choose, if the menu came round for which apocalypse you're about to be dealt, you'd very much want to survive something like a pandemic, viral plague or a flu or something like that. Because what happens there is all the people get killed off and there'll be a small community of survivors that you're one of. But all of the stuff is still here. You get to scavenge what you need for the first couple of years from the abandoned cities, and you get to eat canned food until that runs out in the supermarkets. So you get a grace period, I call it in the book, that gives you the kind of the buffer zone to find your feet, kind of, you know, brush the dust off and start working things out for yourself, to know how to start growing food for yourself before it becomes a matter of life and death with, you know, successful agriculture.
You're listening to WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River, New York and New Jersey Public Radio, as we talk with astrobiologist Lewis Dartnell, author of The Knowledge, How to Rebuild Our World from Scratch. And listeners, is this a topic you've ever spent some time thinking about or watching in a way through Lost or The Walking Dead or World War Z or Mad Max or I Am Legend or on and on? There's a lot of apocalypse pop culture out there. So call in and tell us about your skill, your knowledge. The book is called The Knowledge, the knowledge that we would really need to build the world, to live in the world if we weren't doing everything with Siri on our iPhones, that you think would be useful even after an apocalypse. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And personally, what would you contribute? Maybe we should crowdsource a group of Brian Lehrer Show listeners who, if this comes to pass, and the only thing left is the WNYC app and you could find each other, what could you bring to the table? Can you make a table? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And while calls are coming in, Dr. Dartnell, in the immediate aftermath of whatever kind of catastrophe befalls us, you note that the first concern won't be food. We'll have reserves for a while. In fact, a typical supermarket might sustain a person for over 50 years if managed appropriately, you write. So what would the primary concern be in the aftermath of an actual apocalypse?
So, I mean, clearly, you've got to be wary of other people. With the evaporation of law and order, things will probably get very brutal and violent for a time being. And so you'd want to form together into a community of people that you can trust, you know, to kind of look after each other and start trying to build from scratch. But if you remember one single piece of information, the one thing that can keep you healthy and alive more than any other nugget of information, is the idea of germ theory and this concept that the reason people get sick and pass diseases to each other is because of invisibly small organisms, bacteria, germs that get inside your body and make you ill. And it's just as something simple as keeping your hands clean. And I explain in The Knowledge in the book how to make soap from scratch, how to ensure that your drinking water has been disinfected so you're not contaminating yourself and making yourself sick. So just the tenets of kind of very basic hygiene will do more than any other piece of information to keep you alive.
And what are the ways to clean water? You describe a pretty simple method, for example, using plastic bottles and sunlight. How does that work?
Yes, yeah, so you can boil water. The absolute best way of sterilizing water is to boil it, but that burns through your fuel stocks very quickly. So you could use chemical means to disinfect water, and even things like kitchen bleach or the kind of chlorine that you put into a swimming pool. If you dilute that down enough, it's safe to drink, but has disinfected that drinking water for you. And I talk in the book about how you can scavenge those things and then do some very basic chemistry to make it for yourself from scratch. But actually, one very, very simple way for disinfecting water that's recommended by the World Health Organization for the developing world is, as you say, as simple as getting a clear plastic bottle, no more than a liter or two, putting your water that's suspect into that plastic bottle, and then just leaving in the sunshine for a day or two. And the ultraviolet rays in the sun will kill off the bacteria once you expose them to that sunlight in the clear plastic bottle. So this is called SODIS, or solar disinfection of water. And it's a very, very simple but effective way.
Lewis Dartnell, author of The Knowledge, How to Rebuild Our World from Scratch. We have a full board of people who think they would be valuable participants in this post-apocalyptic world. Let's see what some of our listeners would bring to the table. 212-433-WNYC. Jim in the Bronx, you're on the air. Hi, Jim.
Oh, hi. I didn't know my comments would be relevant. Anyway, I'm a college instructor, and this issue of how you operate in the world, in this technology-driven world, comes up all the time among younger people. And I notice among a fair number, there's an idea that you really don't need to know how to operate in the world so long as you can manage technology. I suspect is that they know that they're undergoing a process of de-skilling, of understanding that they don't know how to do things as well as earlier generations. But there seems to be among some of them this idea that this is no longer necessary, that so long as you can manage today's technology, that's all you really need to have a thriving life, not just, you know, get by. I'm wondering if your guest is sort of reacting to this sort of new cultural orientation. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Jim. Dr. Darnell, is that the basis on which you decided to write this book?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. That's a very, very good point, that we rely a lot on technology to do things for ourselves. But of course, once that technology is gone, you need to know how to, you know, maintain machinery or produce things for yourself. And the phrase I use in the book to describe this is the kind of life support system of modern civilization. And a lot of us have forgotten those basic skills. You know, we're too reliant on the civilization around us. And you need to have, you know how to appreciate these things much more, I think.
Michelle in Clinton Hill, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michelle.
Hello. I'm excited to be on the radio.
I'm glad. And what skill would you have for the post-apocalyptic world?
Well, I'm a birth doula, so I support women in childbirth. I don't support them medically, but I am educated, and that would be a skill, I suppose.
That's a good thing, because if a lot of the people were wiped out, we would want those births to be successful, right?
Yeah, we need to start building up the population.
That's right. Okay. One doula ready to go. How about Augustine in North Brunswick? You're on WNYC. Hi, Augustine.
Hi, Ryan. Big fan of the show.
Thank you.
So I think, like, obviously, right, you need, like, good irrigation systems, all of that. But I'm in high school, but I play piano. So I think, you know, music would be an important aspect to continue in that post-apocalyptic era, you know.
So you're going to be ready to play the piano for whoever's left in the post-apocalyptic world.
Yes.
All right, Augustine, thank you very much. Wait, I think we have no shortage of people like this calling in. Leanne in Manhattan is another one. Hi, Leanne, you're on the air. Leanne? All right, Leanne was going to say she's an actor, writer. We're going to need storytellers and entertainers. So far we've got one doula and two entertainers for our post-apocalyptic world. You do actually write that culture can wait, don't you?
So the knowledge is a science book, and so I naturally focus on the science and technology that you need to run a civilization for yourself. And, of course, I enjoy listening to music and looking at art and reading a great novel as much as anyone else. But I think there is a fair statement that, you know, if people are dying of starvation or of kind of famine and disease and things, those are problems you want to solve very, very quickly. And things like, you know, writing a novel and painting art are kind of secondary to that. They're absolutely important for nourishing your soul, if you see what I mean. But you also need to kind of be able to take care of yourself.
So maybe I should ask the question of the listeners in a different way. What skill do you possess that has kind of disappeared from the modern world?
Yeah, kind of lost knowledge.
Because we have the luxury to be computer programmers and storytellers and things like that, right?
Exactly that. I think that's it. What kind of hands-on practical skills do people have?
Maybe Robin in Southampton has one of those skills. Hi, Robin. You're on WNYC.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What's your skill?
I'm a beekeeper.
And in a post-apocalyptic world, Lewis Dartnell, we'll need beekeepers?
We certainly need bees. So from bees, you obviously get honey. And you can turn honey into mead, which is probably one of the very first alcoholic drinks that ever arose in history. And actually, if people want to kind of read up on that, if you go to the book's website, which is the-knowledge.org, there's an article, a blog post there about how you make mead from honey, kind of a how-to guide. And there's a lot of other stuff you can explore on the website there, including a lot of videos and kind of related material.
Right. The other thing that beekeepers can supply would be wax to give you candles. You could make a wick out of grasses, and you would be able to have light at night.
That's interesting. Robin, have you ever thought about this before, like how your place in society would be transformed from what it is now, or maybe people say, oh, she's a beekeeper, how sweet, she's into nature, to, hey, here's somebody who can really let us survive till next week.
Exactly. Honey is a food source that never goes bad as long as it's kept covered. And, of course, in the hive, after the honey is made, it's capped over. So that food source would be protected from contamination, and it lasts forever. It will crystallize, but then that's fine. As soon as it gets warmed up again, it's in a liquid form. And beekeeping is actually very strenuous. It's a very, now it's become scientific because we have all of these other diseases that are affecting the bees, like colony collapse disorder. But right. In a post-apocalyptic world, the bees, I think, would be ground zero for helping everyone recover.
Robin, thank you so much, and hopefully you'll never need to find out. Robert in White Plains, you're on WNYC. Hi, Robert, what's your skill?
Well, my father taught me how to build a still in the basement of the house.
Ha.
So alcohol is necessary for antiseptic treatment as well as imbibing. It's very two fundamentals for civilization.
Mm.
Dr. Dartnell? He meant, you know, just as everybody was laughing when he said a still, assuming imbibing was what it was about, he mentioned sterilization.
Antiseptics, exactly, and sterilizing wounds to, again, stop yourself getting ill in a world without antibiotics. And you can also, of course, run a car on bioethanol as a fuel. And there's a lot of cars in Brazil that are run by sugarcane that has been fermented and then distilled into ethanol. So there's three things you get out of a still, and they're all very important.
Lewis Dartnell, author of The Knowledge, How to Rebuild Our World from Scratch. And Sean in Manhattan, how could you help?
Hi, yes. With farming, I grow food. So I think we'd have a need for that naturally, even though the author said that any supermarket would sustain us for some time. And also the
if the supermarket was still standing, but go ahead.
Right. And also the first point, I also happen to be a lawyer, and I'm uniquely qualified for this, but I think people, and not that people would want laws right away, but there would need to be some sort of order, and people would have to decide what sort of, there's a government that they need, whether it be democracy or whatever it is. So,
thank you, Sean. Do you get into that at all in the book, or is it purely science and technology?
Yeah, it's mostly focused on the science and technology, and I say that the kind of fundamental processes that underlie civilization. But you had an absolutely first-rate point there, that for all of that to happen, you need to have, you know, peace and tranquility and law and order. And at some point, you know, there's going to be a post-apocalyptic government that arises. And so I don't talk about what form that might take. That might be a democratic government, it might be another form, but it is, of course, very, very important.
And the first skill that he brought to his call was being a farmer before being a lawyer, and it won't surprise many of our listeners to know that, according to your book, a city would be a terrible place to be after an apocalypse. It's also a terrible place to rebuild. Why do you say that, and where would you start geographically?
So cities are clearly very, very artificial constructs. And the only reason that cities can survive today is because you're constantly importing food and materials and kind of energy into the city from the surrounding area, from the rest of the nation. So once civilization collapses and that kind of life support system evaporates and the power grid goes down and there's no more food being grown, a city's the worst place you're going to want to be. You need to go somewhere with, you know, agricultural fields and a fresh source of water and away from all the concrete and asphalt. So I would, that previous caller would very much be one of the first people I'd want on my post-apocalyptic survival team. We're going to need a lot of farmers to keep feeding society after the end.
On our Brian Lehrer WNYC Facebook page, we asked listeners for the skill or attribute of theirs that they think would be helpful for rebuilding after an apocalypse. Would it surprise you to hear that about a quarter of the posts were about leadership skills or good communication or negotiation skills? Only one person out of the 50 claimed to know how to purify water, one. And I guess, you know, it's a function of this mostly urban listening area that we have.
That's it. I think that's it. I mean, I didn't have any of these hands-on practical skills whatsoever when I first started. I live in London. I've got a small flat in North London. I don't know how to grow food for myself. I don't know how to make things or do things. And it's been very much a learning curve, a learning process for me while I've been researching and writing the knowledge. But clearly things like leadership and keeping your community together and interpersonal skills and communication skills, they're all going to be important as long as you've got at least some farmers and some people who can, you know, have the skills of an ironsmith and making things for everyone else.
And of all the useful machines to remake, as you say, an ironsmith, the lathe seems to be among your favorites. Why a lathe?
So a lathe is an incredible piece of machinery, and it was, you know, invented a few hundred years ago, and or the current form of the lathe we use today appeared a few hundred years ago. And very, very simply, it's just a way of holding something and then turning it around on itself, so you can bring in a tool to cut it, you know, make a table leg or that kind of thing. But fundamentally, you need a lathe for making things like the cylinders of an engine. And what's amazing about a lathe is that once you've got one lathe, you can make many other lathes from it. It can essentially reproduce itself. It can make the components for other machines. And even when you're halfway through building your very first lathe, you can use your kind of half-built tool, half-built machine, to complete the rest of the components for its own construction. And there was a great example of a machinist called David Gingery who did this a few decades ago. And he started with nothing but an empty steel bucket and some sand and some charcoal and some old aluminium, some scrap aluminium. And he showed how to go right from scratch of melting that aluminium down, pouring it into casts to make a few components of a lathe, and then use that lathe to make the other bits it needs until you've got this. In the end of the day, he had a complete machinery workshop just from nothing more but charcoal and some scrap metal right at the beginning.
That's
the process you'd have to go to reboot the whole of civilization.
Let's go real quick through some more of our callers and hear what other skills they think they have to bring if we had to restart society from scratch. Claire in Sleepy Hollow, what would you do?
Oh, hi. I am an herbalist, and I would be able to provide a lot of different kinds of medicine to folks.
And I'm going to leave it there. Very useful in that scenario. Paulette in Manhattan, what would you bring?
Well, I know how to forage and also identify like herbs as well. But also, I know how to stalk meat and dry meat and skin a chicken and a rabbit because I grew up as a farm girl down in Alabama.
We definitely want a good hunter-gatherer like you on our team. No question. Jimmy in Bayville, you're on WNYC. What could you bring?
I'm a plumber, and I could help bring aqueducts and provide sanitary facilities. And also, I possess what I believe is a very vivid imagination. I built a hovercraft out of plywood and a leaf blower over the weekend. Menties.
Wonderful.
Thank you very much. And, you know, it's interesting, Dartnell, that a lot of people are calling in not just with their actual skills, but with something about their personality. Somebody's holding on to say, oh, I'm very resourceful.
Yeah,
and he just said, oh, I'm very imaginative. And you say resilience. So all that stuff matters too.
Absolutely. It's as much about psychology and resourcefulness. And in the long term, you're going to want to maintain your curiosity and your willingness to explore and understand things because it's science that built our modern world, and it's science that you need to relearn everything else from scratch again to recover after an apocalypse.
We'll read one last one from our Facebook page from Emily, who writes, I can help repopulate. I specialize in spontaneously conceiving and bearing triplets. Then she writes, wait, never mind. I'm never doing that again. Sorry, world. So we will leave it there. But I think if everything disappears except the file of this show, you folks and hopefully me will be able to find each other and build the world from scratch with the guidance of Dr. Lewis Dartnell, astrobiologist and author of The Knowledge, How to Rebuild Our World from Scratch. He's also a UK Space Agency research fellow at the University of Leicester. There's an excerpt of the book on our website at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show if you are that intrigued. Fascinating. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehr on WNYC. Coming up next, progressives for more cops. Stay tuned.